This is entrepreneur and author John McLaughlin thanking you for listening to another amazing episode of The Road to Rediscovery. It's time to sit back, relax, and listen as your host, Aubrey Johnson, safely navigates us through life's challenges and guides us on a rewarding path of self-discovery.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson, and I'm so excited that you're here with me. Road to Rediscovery, The Road to Rediscovery, is all about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts, any platform worldwide, around the world, even some platforms you may not have even heard of. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we invite you to leave a rate and review. And if you don't, that's okay too. We still would love your input. Just send us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. And if you play your cards right, you might get a little bit of Road to Rediscovery swag as well. Also, whether you leave feedback or not, I just want to express that we are always, always truly, truly grateful for your listenership. Okay. My special guest is a motivational and personal development psychologist who has weathered her own health struggles, having been hospitalized multiple times as a child with severe asthma and eating disorder as a teenager and bouts with depression as an adult. She's learned and harnessed the power of mindset, and today she helps others adopt the mindset they need to achieve their goals. Let's welcome Rebecca Wanick to the show. Rebecca, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to join you. I really love, you know, the opportunity to be able to share. And it's great that you have, you know, so many people that are listening and tuning in to try to learn more about, like you said, the road to rediscovery.
Absolutely. And thank you. We reciprocate. We are truly, truly grateful for you coming on the show. We can't wait to hear some amazing, incredible insights that I have no doubt will resound and resonate with the listener. All right. If we can start early on, there's a little bit to unpack here, Rebecca. Can you walk us through initially some of the health struggles that you were having and your initial mindset in response to those struggles?
Sure, absolutely. It's funny because at the time when I was young, I didn't really think about myself as somebody who was sick, mm-hmm. but I was really sick. I had very, very severe asthma. And I was growing up in the early 80s when the medical treatment, I mean, there was medicine, but it wasn't as advanced as it is now. And so I did end up in the hospital a couple of times. I had an at-home nebulizer, had to call my parents many times from sleepovers to come pick me up. And so I think what that did was kind of set the stage for me feeling vulnerable about my place in the world, because I didn't really feel safe. I couldn't breathe a lot of the time. And that kind of creates this existential angst for you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, growing older, when I was in high school, I think I turned a lot of that, those feelings of feeling unsafe and feeling sick into just dislike for myself and who I was. And I didn't really know how to deal with it effectively. So that kind of manifested as an eating disorder, and I had very, very severe struggle with anorexia that I ended up in an outpatient program. And that was like, I learned some things from it, but it was also kind of an interesting experience because I was in a situation where I was interacting with a lot of other people with eating disorders. And one of the things that is known about people with eating disorders, they're very competitive. So it was like this very sort of like unhealthy microcosm of people teaching other people unhealthy behaviors. And as a consequence of that, I kind of transitioned from anorexia into bulimia. And that was a much harder struggle to overcome because it's easier to hide it from the people that are around you. But it wasn't until I was late in my college years that I finally started to think about, like, I don't like this for me. You know, I was always really good at school. I was excelling, graduated top 3% of my collegiate class. But the outcomes that I wanted for myself psychologically and emotionally, they were not things that I was able to get. And then I was very, very fortunate through, you know, trying a number of different therapists to find somebody who was just perfect for me. And she really helped me to change the way that I viewed my place in the world and my sense of agency. Yeah. What I feel like I learned early on was that I didn't have a lot of control over the things that were occurring. I felt like life was happening to me and I was born with these extra struggles. And then I started to think about, like, even if that is the case, there's so much that I have control over. And if nothing else, I have control over the way that I'm reacting in the situation.
Right.
Every time you're engaging in an action, you have the choice of determining, am I doing something that's pushing me closer towards my goals,
yes, or
taking me farther away? And I think once I learned that, and I learned the importance of self-forgiveness, that sometimes you won't make the right choice, but that's okay. That's not a reason to give up. That's not a reason to let yourself feel overly discouraged. Then I really was able to get reset on a path towards what I always call now self-optimization, like being really oriented to do the things on a regular basis that are going to help keep you up and going, even when life is a struggle, because new things will always come along.
Right.
And now I actually, about 5 years ago, I started experiencing really severe problems with muscle pain. And one of the things that kind of helped me to get out of the eating disorder and, you know, get reset with respect to like psychological well-being was exercise. I used it as a healthy coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And then I started noticing that I was having just so much pain. Every time I did anything physical, I felt like I was basically, I'd run a marathon. I would take these long naps. And that's still something that's kind of an ongoing struggle, because one of the things that you learn as a middle-aged woman, you go to the doctor and you say you're experiencing some kind of nebulous pain. Oh, yeah. It's stress. It's psychosomatic. And so it's been kind of a double challenge of getting people to take my situation seriously, right, while at the same time trying to get help and learning to, in the event that there is no solution, which I'm starting to feel like there might not be, how do I deal with this as a new challenge, an ongoing challenge? But I really feel like the earlier challenges that I was able to overcome with the help of other people has put me in a position where I don't let this, you know, knock me off track. I can keep moving forward despite the fact that it's a new challenge. And there may be something else that comes along in the future, but I feel like I'm ready for it now.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And being in contact with those people who were able to help you come to that point of realization within yourself helps you to better manage and respond to things like the muscle pain that you're going through now, and trying to figure out whether or not there's a cure for it or a solution. But at least you have the mindset to an expectation to learn how to manage it.
Exactly.
If there's no solution or no lightning in a bottle, so to speak. That makes a lot of sense. One thing that I thought I heard you mention, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Rebecca, is some of the things that you went into, right, with the asthma, severe asthma, and then how, you know, from a health issue perspective, over time, it kind of evolved to, you know, eating disorders and so forth. There seems to be some behavioral connection between the two or between the three. And I thought they were, I don't know, mutually exclusive, but it sounds like they were connected because I thought I heard you mention, you know, you kind of thought, I guess it was a hit on your self-esteem, thought less of yourself as someone who can socially interact, not sure where I fit. And so in response, you start, you know, having eating disorders or being bulimic or anorexia and things like that. So is there a behavioral connection that kind of bridged from one to the other? And I basically, I'm asking that, you know, generally, you know, would people tend to have a behavioral connection between, you know, different types of medical issues?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, that's not an area of my expertise, so I can't say, you know, how frequently it occurs. I think for me, the thing that was like the connecting factor was more about the way that I felt about who I was and my ability to control things in the world. Because when you're a kid and you have very, very severe asthma and inhalers don't control it, and you constantly need to be, you know, like calling the doctor to get extra medication, you feel like a lot of your existence is sort of out of your control, and it's scary. And I don't think I know I didn't have the ability to process that psychologically. And then I have a twin sister who is like a wonderful, wonderful person. But growing up, she had some asthma, but it was nowhere near as severe as me. So it was also like this constant comparison of like, it's like, you could have been like this. Instead, you're like this. And so I think like there was stuff that I needed to work through with that as well. You know, she has always been maximally supportive of me, but you know, a lot of times you can't see that, or you still have things that you need to work through to sort of like take ownership of the way that you're feeling. So it's a constant comparison of somebody that I felt like was always better than me, healthier than me, didn't have the struggles. And so that can be a little bit demotivating as well when you start to sort of develop this mindset of like, woe is me, why does everything negative always happen to me? But part of what I did in terms of like changing my mindset was, one, realize like, even if it is the case that everything negative is always happening to me, I still have a choice of how I handle it.
Yes.
And then secondly, it's not the case that everything is happening to you, because what you don't know is the struggles that somebody else is going through.
100%. You know, and so
it's like always reminding yourself that like they look like they're handling it, they look like they've got everything together, but you don't know what they've been dealing with back, you know, in the places that you don't get access to. And so everybody has struggles. And I started thinking of it as like, it's kind of a selfish, childish way of viewing the world to feel constantly like this woe is me. I have much more power than that. I'm much more mature than that. And when I could kind of like get myself to think about that, this state of mind is not the type of person that I want to be, that was really motivational for me in helping to really force myself to change the way that I was viewing and responding to situations.
Yeah, I can agree. And I've tend to fallen in that rut myself over the years. I call it comparative thinking. And it really, really has stunted opportunities for growth during the times I would do this comparative thinking, right? And like you said, you know, it can be debilitating for you when you are comparing yourself to your sister, and she didn't have as severe a condition with asthma and so forth. And then you start saying, you know, woe is me, and just falling into that victim role and everything. Mm-hmm. And it can also be blinding, right? I mean, because you could be so full of what you're telling yourself internally in that internal dialogue that you don't see the support of your sister and how supportive she is of you, you know, in going through these things. This is incredible insight that I really appreciate you sharing with the listeners. So they know, you know, we all have these struggles. We all have tend to compare ourselves and ask, you know, hey, do I measure up? Am I making the mark, right? Or why am I falling short? And if I'm falling short, then all this bad stuff happens to me. Another insight you shared is selfishness. it's incredibly selfish of one to have this woe is me type of thinking, although a lot of people may not think that. They may think it's counterintuitive, but it is selfish because you're shunning everything else, especially the care that others have for you, to live in that woe is me type of thing, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think like for me, being selfish is like a really bad thing. So labeling that as selfish is a really good way to like push me to not want to engage in it. And I think one of the things that you just kind of made me think about was this idea of, you know, feeling like you don't measure up when you have high standards for yourself. It's easy to feel like you're falling short. Yeah. So, I mean, I've always been kind of like a perfectionist on everything. Mm. If I'm not, you know, doing things at the top level, I feel like it's a failure. I distinctly remember my dad when we were kids, I didn't get like an A plus on an exam when I was young. And he's like, but you got an A, like, just, you know, just go with it. But also like thinking about balancing that sense of wanting more for yourself, pushing yourself, trying to achieve, but also making space for not always getting the things that you want. And then I know it sounds trite, but I feel like the older that you get, and maybe you'll agree or disagree with me on this, but you know, people always say like, sometimes not getting what you thought you wanted is the best thing for you. Oh, and I think the more experiences that you have as you get older, the more you realize that it's so true, because it opens doors that you didn't even think about opening because you weren't in a position to see their value.
Rebecca, 1,000% agree. Okay. And in my mind, at least, anyone with some degree of self-awareness in their lives about themselves, where they're going, where they're at, what's their current condition, what is the ideal condition they want, anyone who has that amount of self-awareness, when they don't get something they expect or they feel they deserve, you know, days, weeks, months, years down the line, something else comes in that's a larger opportunity. They have that awareness to reflect and actually see why. And having it happen in the past, if something you expect doesn't come to you again, then yes, you can better appreciate that because you know something else is in store. There's another opportunity around the corner. There's something going here, something going there. And yes, so I could not agree more, Rebecca. And I can also understand where you're coming from with the high expectations you've had, right? Academically, especially, you know, that's another added pressure that we put on ourselves, or some of us put on ourselves as wanting to be perfectionists. So what I wanted to now ask you, and thank you for painting that picture for us on where you were and what your mindset was, right? So when you mentioned earlier about as a young adult, you started to put yourself in front of people who could actually help and guide and give you, you know, direction, point you in the right direction towards, you know, just having a better disposition about yourself and where you are and how you respond to things. Right. Mm-hmm. So were these people the ones that gave you the early introduction in, you know, having a new mindset, a reformed mindset, a new perspective? Was that your early introduction into that, opposite of what your mindset was before?
Yeah. So to be honest with you, I think one of the things that really kind of started me thinking about that I need to do more to get myself to a better place was actually starting to study psychology. Because there's this joke in psychology that lots of people go into psychology because they're trying to fix themselves. But to a certain extent, it's like, and I try to tell this to my students now, it's like you're learning things, and oftentimes in school you feel like what you're learning has no relevance to your daily existence, but psychology is very different from that. So as I started to like learn different ideas from the different sub areas of psychology, I really started to think about how they were impacting the way that I was thinking about and responding to the world. And so just to give you kind of a concrete example, I ended up doing my dissertation for my PhD on social comparison and body image, because that is one of the issues that people who suffer from eating disorders oftentimes struggle with is body image, and picking the wrong sources in the environment to compare to that will always leave you feeling worse about yourself. Right. And so what I did my dissertation work on was like, are there ways that we could adjust mindset to make those comparisons when they occur less negatively impactful. And there's other little things that I've learned along the way. And this is one of the things that's great about being in a position to continue teaching this, is there's constantly things where you're like, here's this principle, here's this way of adjusting how you can view things, put it into practice, and then you get to see how beneficial it is. That's motivation to keep trying to make those little tweaks and changes. And it keeps you going on that path.
No, that's a great approach. That's a great strategy. I definitely agree with that. And when it comes to, I guess, what you picked up with psychology, I want to ask you this, but I'm trying to think of how to frame it. Let's see. First off, let me know whether or not you agree or disagree, but it's just an observation that I've had. Okay. And I would just love to know if there's an answer to this. Psychologically speaking, Rebecca, how can we explain the irony that a lot of people that I've at least observed behind a lot of people in society, why we often have a mindset to worry and dread over things we can't control, yet not do anything to improve our situations that we can control?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So part of it is that the bigger things that we can't control, they stand out in your mind more because they're just more emotionally impactful. But I totally agree with you that one of the big important pieces to try to sort of change your trajectory is to realize that wasting time worrying about the things that you have no control over is not putting you in a position to make changes when you can. Right. I think there's also a self-protective piece to that. Again, you said it's ironic. It's kind of counterintuitive. But if I'm worrying about stuff that I have no control over, then I don't have to feel responsible for not doing the things that I can control. Because it's like, oh, my mind's over here. There's all of this big stuff that I can't do anything about. So it allows you to kind of like give yourself license to not focus on the small, potentially more important things that could help put you in a better place. I mean, you see this stuff all the time with people with diet and exercise.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm so tired of like all these excuses of like, you know, it's like blaming lack of access to healthy food for being overweight. And like, I'm too busy to exercise. You're never too busy to exercise. You could take the stairs everywhere you go instead of the elevator. You don't have to eat that extra candy. But I mean, it's very rare that there's not things that people are doing that are contributing to their ill health.
Correct.
But they can focus on these sort of like larger things that are less controllable, and that sort of frees them up psychologically from worrying about the small things. So you have to catch yourself, and you also have to be around people that can help you to catch yourself. So I always joke that I'm probably like the world's most annoying friend, because a lot of times, I'm very good at listening to people, but at some point I will just be like, yo, what I'm hearing you say is this.
Yeah.
But actually here's a couple of concrete things that you can be focusing on. And I love when people do that for me too, because it's easy to get spun out into, you know, like you just get lost in your own thought process. So having, you know, good people that can be, that are able to challenge you in a way that doesn't make you defensive, that helps you to see like they're here to help you. They'll support you when you need it, but also kind of challenging you to make those changes is really important.
It's like you've read my mind. I mean, this is a perfect segue into talking about your optimization for mindset, right? And reconditioning, because I definitely want us to go into this and really unpack and reveal for the listeners, you know, some of the anecdotes and what you mean when it comes to methods and ways that you coach and teach for optimization for mindset and reconditioning. As you were just explaining that, you know, being the most annoying friend and calling them out when say, hey, you said you would do this, you didn't do that, or even you enjoy it when they do the same to you, right? So yes. This process of reconditioning and optimization for mindset improvement, in my view, from what I've read with about your work, it appears to encourage us to, and again, I apologize for lack of a better term, quote, pick up our bootstraps and put on our big boy and big girl pants and hold ourselves accountable. And that is a very, very important piece. I think we alluded to self-awareness a few minutes ago mm-hmm. in our conversation. I think a lot of that has some involvement there as well. But being that annoying friend for those who have assumed themselves as the victim, okay, and those who have decided, and now that you say it, you know, it is counterintuitive. Those who have decided to occupy their mind and energy towards the things that they can't control as to give them somewhat of a pass on not doing what they can control. For those who have assumed that role, the victim, and they decide to wallow in their misery for so long that they find it difficult to toughen up, I would imagine your coaching methods kind of help them achieve that self-awareness and accountability. I mean, would that be a preliminary thing to work on before I don't know, optimizing the mindset?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, I think at the core initially when okay. working with clients is figuring out for them what are the primary issues. And oftentimes it is associated with feeling not powerful, feeling like right. a victim in certain domains. Mm-hmm. Like two big things that I try to work with people on are mm-hmm. one, most of the time when you're saying it's an issue with someone else, it's a you issue. And so you, like, if you can constantly take ownership and say it's a me issue, yeah. that makes you so much more powerful, because the only person you have any amount of control over is you. You have zero control over other people. You can yes. try to affect their behavior by changing your own, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they've got their own stuff going on. But mm-hmm. I see this a lot with clients in relationships mm-hmm. where they're complaining about things that their partner is doing, or they're talking about various types of things in the interaction. And what I'm always hearing is it's like you're not recognizing what's a you issue that you're projecting on them, because then it becomes the partner's responsibility to fix it, which yeah. it's not fair. No. So like owning the fact that you're not perfect, owning the fact that you should in every situation when you're upset, mm-hmm. first and foremost, say, what am I contributing to this? Like, why am I upset? And yes. and don't start with it's because they did X, Y, or Z. Start right. with because I feel insecure, because mm-hmm. I know that they're pointing out to me something that I failed on, and that's making me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's a really uncomfortable place to be, but that's the only way to grow your power. It starts from within. And if you're too afraid of taking ownership, then you're going to just sit there and wallow. And I say this all the time to people. It's like, I'm not making choices for you. You can make whatever choice you make. I will continue right. to talk to you right. ad nauseum. You can make whatever choice you make. I'm here for you no matter what. But right. what you need to think about is this choice going to be one that the next time we meet is going to make you feel good about sharing where you're at? Is this choice going to be one that 6 months from now, you're going to look back and be like, I'm glad I made that choice. Right. Or 6 months in the future, you're going to be like, why did you do that to me? I wish you would have made the change then, because I would have had 6 months of working, you know, and look how far I would have come. You know, yeah. so really just like, it's hard for people to take ownership. But if you can do it in a way that helps them to break down their defenses, to feel vulnerable, but feel supported, I think that's really key. And I have like a sense of humor about almost everything. So I think, you know, one of the ways that I help people to feel comfortable and not defensive is by using humor to kind of diffuse the situation. Right. And then I think, you know, it's kind of clear. I'm an oversharer. There's very little about like my past or experiences that I don't feel comfortable sharing. And I think sometimes when you're working with clients, for them to know that like you've had similar types of struggles validates the experience that they're in. So they don't feel like, oh, you know, the situation is so unique. Nobody can really understand where I'm coming from. Of course, everybody's right. got their own specific situation, but there's parallels across many individuals. And so knowing what has worked for me, I mean, I've had a lot of, we haven't covered like half of the stuff that I've had to go through to get over it. And so it's like knowing that I've been able to push through, I think, is also something that oftentimes lends some validity to what I'm trying to share and work on with clients.
Well, sure. They see you here on the other side, right?
Yeah.
And not to discount or say that, you know, there aren't still things you're working through,
right,
but
right.
they see you here on the other side of let's say the largest lion's share of the struggle. Okay. Right. On the other side of that part now. Wow, that was a tremendous amount of insight, Rebecca. I had a point I wanted to kind of dovetail on what you said, and I was just taking it in so much that I kind of lost that dovetail point. But you know, I mean, you know, you said it all. You said it all right there. I mean, people need to, you know, understand that they are responsible for the choices they make, right? And from an accountability perspective in your coaching method, one thing I thought I heard you say that I can appreciate is, well, two things. Number one, the humor to kind of diffuse, you know, some of that. Number two, actually three things. Number two, taking that hard look in the mirror, okay? And it is hard to kind of own up to, you know, what role you played in something that went sideways, okay? Or in something that went arrift. But again, taking that hard look in the mirror. And number three, which I think is, I think it's brilliant. And it's something that I think needs to be done. It's important and it's not deceitful or anything, but it's letting the person know, you know, creating that safe space for them so they know that they're free to make whatever choice they want and you'll still work with them and support them. But from an accountability standpoint, think about how you would feel the next time we meet, right?
Right.
Not just saying, if you come back and tell me blah, 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 then I'm going to feel blah, blah, blah. No, think about how you would feel them in coming yep. back and having to tell you, you know, what they have to tell you. Would they feel comfortable about that, right? It's putting them in their own shoes, fast forward a week or 2 weeks or whatever the cadence is, to realize that about themselves, that is extraordinary, you know. And I have to commend you for just giving us that piece of insight, because you know, listeners, whether or not they have an accountability coach or a coach or anything, that's enough for listeners to comprehend to say, hey, you know, maybe I do need to take that look in the mirror at myself. And hold myself accountable for the things that I've done. And, you know, I can be a part of the solution or a part of the problem. You know, do right. I perpetuate it or do I make a change? Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And I love what you just said, because I think like that's the whole point of coaching, is that you learn a set of skills that yeah. you can take with you. You know, I mean, it's like, I'm happy to coach somebody for the rest of their life. But in an ideal situation, you acquire a set of skills. Now you hold yourself accountable. That's what, you know, I didn't get to where I am on my own. There's a lot of people that helped me to change the way that I viewed myself and my place in the world. And I have those skills that I can now share with other people. I'm very, very good at holding myself accountable now. I don't really need the extra assistance anymore.
Right.
But I will say, every once in a while, I reach out to those very important support people, because I can't do it all on my own, even now, being much stronger than I was in the past. And that's like an important thing, I think, to remember as well. Because I think, you know, we oftentimes tell people, reach out for help when you need it. And sometimes people don't do it. But there has to be this balance of taking responsibility for making the help that you seek effective. Because what I see a lot is people that are like, they go to coaching or they go to therapy and they're not doing anything with the information that they're getting. They're not actually challenging themselves. It's just like, you know, a checkbox. Like, I feel like I'm doing something to help myself because I'm going to see this coach or because I'm going to therapy. But again, if you're not taking responsibility for really incorporating those ideas and making changes, you're selling yourself short, but you're also taking advantage of the assistance that the other person is providing for you. You're really, again, being selfish because you're not doing your part in the partnership to help yourself get well.
Oh, no, for sure. Right. And you're robbing yourself of the empowerment that this person is giving you, the empowerment for in helping you deduce, you know, your own solutions, and have your own self-realizations, you know. My background is talent development, and I support a lot of executives in their development. And so, you know, one of the things from leadership development that we talk about is empowering those who directly report to us. So whenever we're talking through a problem, we're not giving them the answer. We may not even be that close to the detail, right? But we're asking questions to help guide and kind of direct and navigate that person to realizing their answer, right? And that's where the empowerment comes in. And to your point, they are robbing themselves of that if they're just going through the motions, checking the box off, and not putting what it comes out of those meetings into actionable steps.
Yep. It's hard. It's really hard to take ownership. But once you do, you realize that life is so much better after taking that step in so many amazing ways. You're just so much more powerful. And stuff that used to drag you down will not have the ability to drag you down anymore because you're just seeing things with a whole new perspective.
Yes, a whole new door and window of opportunity.
Yeah.
Just kind of release and cascade, right? But again, we have to get over that hump and, you know, own up to ourselves, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything, right?
Right.
Yeah. So Rebecca, I wanted to ask you about, and I'm sure you heard this term, and I've been in discussions with people, we've talked about reframing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talk about reframing and the original, I guess, perspective we had on something that would happen and how we respond to it. And then, you know, being conscious about it, reframe it into something different to allow us to have a different outlook on it, to respond in a different way, maybe a way that's more healthy, right? I wanted to ask you, it seems like for the optimization, right, and the reconditioning of the mindset, it's going deeper than reframing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it has to. Usually, it starts with reframing because that's kind of the first step. Okay. But then it's more kind of just reconceptualizing your view of you as an agent in the world. And that's a bit bigger than just reframing any one particular type of an event, but it's a process, right? And I distinctly remember like one of the things that first helped me kind of, you know, get started on changing my mindset was my therapist told me, if you have a thought, just ask yourself, is this helpful? She's like, and you just start there. It's so simple. Just, is this helpful or not? And then it's like, eventually you get to the point, like, if it's not helpful, ignore it. If it's helpful, use it, you know, but it's like, you have to start somewhere. And so reframing is really important and powerful. But the other thing that I think sometimes people don't respond well to reframing is because it's like, if I'm in the middle of having like a really bad experience that, you know, things are just like, I'm just sad.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to let yourself have that negative emotion, but you can't let yourself get stuck there. That's what I always say. It's like, have it, let yourself wallow, but give yourself a time frame. So I just had something bad happen to me last week. And I like texted my dad and I was like, I'm like, oh, you know, like I'm disappointed. And he's like, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm going to give myself an hour. I'm going to cry about it for about 10 minutes. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to pick myself back up and I'm going to move on. Cause I'm too busy.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
other things to worry about it. But it's like, if you don't give yourself space to sort of have the negative emotion, then you're not validating that sometimes life is hard. Sometimes things are crap and they're just unpleasant, and that's okay. And you have to be comfortable with being okay with sitting with the negative emotion. But the kind of victim mindset is like, it lets that negative emotion take over. And that sort of starts to define you. And you expect other people to feel sorry for you because this bad thing happened to you. That is totally disempowering, right? So you have to learn skills and strategies to let yourself feel without getting stuck in that place.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And Rebecca, is this what you refer to as the vent to reinvent?
Yes, exactly. Okay. That is 100% why I called the coaching business Vent to Reinvent, because you got to get stuff off your chest. You got to have space to be upset about things. Sometimes life is just not nice. Sometimes it's not fair. Yeah. But then you move on to, why am I letting this out? Am I letting it out so I could stay stuck? Of course not. You're venting so that you can put yourself in a position to move forward on a much more positive trajectory. Reinvent and learn that you have the power to continue working towards the things that you want, even when you're experiencing some setbacks, you know? And the thing is, you will start to realize that, like, whatever life throws your way, you'll feel like you can handle it. Like, you won't, you're much less fearful when you're coming from a state of ownership and empowerment, because it's kind of like, all right, come at me, bro. Like, what's the next thing that you're going to throw my way? Cause I know that I'm going to be able to get through this too. Yeah. And so I usually try to like encourage people, if they can, do the thing that's harder. Cause the more that you challenge yourself to always do the thing that's harder, the less hard the rest of life becomes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's very logical and it could be even be more inspiring and more empowering, something that you have put off for a long time that you don't want to conquer or challenge. And you they take your advice and they go for the harder thing first. Then it's like, wow, man, I put that to bed right away. I can take on anything, you know, and then, you know, they're on top of the world. It's like, bring it, right? Come at me, bro. this is delightful, Rebecca. It really is. Can you let us know how can the listeners follow you, connect with you, learn more about the great work you're doing and maybe even follow you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So to learn more about the coaching, you can go to my website, vent2reinvent.com. Mm-hmm. And then I have a link to my blog there and you can sign up for the blog. I've not sent out a blog in the last couple of weeks because I had some exciting news. I published a book. And so I've been kind of like focusing a little bit on the book part of things. But if you sign up for the blog, I try to send out like weekly, inspirational kind of, or things to think about. Yeah. And then the best way to kind of follow for all of the updates is actually on LinkedIn. I post most of the things that are going on with me on LinkedIn. So you can connect with me on there as well.
Fantastic. And by the way, congratulations
on your
book. Congratulations for sure. And, That is wonderful news. And so your LinkedIn handle, your website, all that information, we will make sure we have those links in the episode show notes so the listeners can click on those, learn more about your work, connect with you on LinkedIn while listening to this wonderful conversation. Dr. Rebecca Wanick, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I really appreciate the insights. I really appreciate the discoveries and rediscoveries that you have encountered and on your journey that you've shared with the listeners. I hope we can stay in touch. I'd love to bring you back on the show sometime in the near future, maybe even to talk about your book.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Aubrey, for having me. This was a huge, huge pleasure. I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity to be able to share and discuss these topics with you. And I would love to join you again. Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. I will hold you to that, Rebecca, yeah, for sure.
Keep me accountable, right?
Yeah, accountable for sure. We'll be accountability buddies. How about that? Yes, perfect. Awesome. And hey, look, I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And you know, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're not alone. And you know, hope is just around the corner. All we need to do is look. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. And you know, when it comes down to it, we're all just roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.